WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley here with the one and only John Travolta. Thanks so much for joining us. We're talking The Fanatic. I just watched it. What about the subject matter of a Fanatic fan? I mean, I'm sure you've been on you know, both sides of that one before over there.
Well, I do have a full knowledge of all the characters in the movie, especially the fan and especially the film actor. So I can look at it from all the sides of the story. But I am a fan by nature. I always, you know, had a thing for being excited about watching a good artist, a good athlete, a person that made a difference in the world. I identify with being a fan. This character, however, is, you know, to some degree on the spectrum. And in all fairness to his side, you know, he's just crazy about this movie star that he wants to meet desperately more than anything in the world. And then when the movie star mistreats him, he doesn't know what to do with it because he's picked on a lot in life. He's bullied. So when the person he loves the most in the world, and at least in his fantasies, mistreats him, he gets confused. Yeah. And then he kind of nukes the line of privacy, nukes the line of a moral code of, you know, ethics, let's say. So, and the movie star is a good person, and you see that he's a good person, but he isn't a good celebrity.
He has his limits.
He has his limits, and he's often not observant of this guy. It's like he's not seeing that this is an unusual guy.
Right.
He just thinks he's a stalker-type fan, but he doesn't realize that there's a little something different about him. So, you know, he could have solved it easily by just signing the goods or something.
As you say, all he wanted was an autograph.
and the thing is he's also the kind of guy that if the tire's flat, he kicks the cat. Yeah. So he's, you know, Moose is the cat in this scenario.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
But I just thought it was uniquely written. I thought it was had a vision. You know, Fred is so good at. You know, Fred Durst, who's the director, and he's head of the Limp Bizkit.
Of course.
And he's a brilliant filmmaker, but also a great actor. So he was able to improvise with me before we'd start and kind of inspire the thought process of Moose. And it was a good team together, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned sort of that he was maybe a little on the spectrum. I noticed I was enjoying, my favorite thing watching the movie was watching your different acting choices of things that you would do. I noticed a lot. You rarely made eye contact with people, darting eyes around, constant. Obviously, that you would kind of have a rocking that you're going on. Take me just from an actor's perspective of when you read that on the page, of you creating these little tics and little, you know, mannerisms, because that guy is a fully lived-in character that you created with your with those little choices, you know. But how do you take us into that taking, you know?
First of all, whenever I look at a character, I see what is he doing in the movie? What do I have to justify in his behavior? So he does, without revealing the details, he does some very extreme acts, including invading privacy. But the way he does it was so. It wasn't just man child innocent. It was a clocking of the seriousness of what he has just done. So I thought I have to put him a little more advanced on the spectrum to justify that.
Yeah,
which I did. But when you do that, then you can create behavior physically that allows you to understand where he's coming from, and verbiage that articulates that too. So the style in which he speaks and his physical, the way he walks on his toes, you know, his kind of playing with his ear and smelling it, and all those kinds of things help you understand this character visually, because it is a visual medium. And in film, I think it's important to make a painting. You know, if this is, do you know the one of my favorite parts of the movie is the black screen when the sketches fill with color,
a little animation,
with that kind of classical music underneath it, which gives you the haunting ambiance, but it also gives you the Murat Saad kind of slightly demented perspective, which includes this kind of physical behavior, Do you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I love those sketches. I'm glad you pointed those out. And is that a Fred thing or
a Fred thing?
Yeah, I'm sure him working in music videos and stuff before helps that transition a lot easier. So yeah.
Yeah, the great thing about Fred is he had a vision, and I think the thing with depicting great directors from ordinary directors is ask them what their vision is, and boom.
Either they got one or not.
they either have one or they don't, and you'll be amazed by the amount of people that cannot articulate their vision. And it's all about vision. And that's what I've never understood, is that if you're going to really call yourself an auteur, a filmmaker, you must, as a criteria, have it's not the writing of a book.
Sure.
It's the creating of visual of imagery that affects you. So in telling the story. So when he was so brilliant at articulating what he wanted, and those sketches are one of the, you know, interesting parts of his vision, that you knew that you were in good hands, you know, with him. And also his ability as an actor to know when something's really good or not.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of auteurs, we're in the 25th anniversary, right, of Tarantino, of Pulp Fiction, which totally, you know, just totally shot, that adrenaline shot right into your career, again, back in it. Just speak on the legacy. We're looking 25 years back. What is it? Is it how he moves the pieces around? I mean, we'd seen that with Citizen Kane, All About Eve. I mean, it wasn't the first time, but Tarantino did it in such a way with that dialogue and Royale with Cheese. And I always know, I love when people go back and look at that again to see, you know, you're in the bathroom during the whole standoff, but you also get killed in the bathroom. Right. You can see you walking in the background when they're doing the Honey Bunny thing. You can see you guys walk in. Just talk about how that, you're speaking to the vision. All those pieces are all, while jumbled around for the viewer, it's all there. It's all part of that cohesive vision. Of what was Quentin's vision in that?
Well, he's unique in that he is a film student as well. He studied film critique, and he has his own wild imagination, and he has a way of telling a story that is his own particular original vision. So you're just seeing someone who allows you to interpret what you want out of it. You don't know how many times I've asked, what's in the black briefcase,
the MacGuffin,
or what the Band-Aid means in the back of the character's neck and all that. So that's when Altman was like that too. Altman left a lot to your imagination, because doesn't really matter what he's thinking. It matters what you're thinking. So that's part of his genius, I think, you know.
But Vincent Vega itself as a character, how much fun was that to play and do that? Read the off of Samuel L. and getting to do those back and forth of, Royale with Cheese. Like when you read that on the page, can you tell that that's just going to be a movie icon right there? Or Dancing with Uma. I mean, there's so many iconic moments in that. Do you look back, now we're at the 25th anniversary, do you look back and just smile thinking at those moments?
Well, those moments, listen, all the great directors hire an actor because they trust them. And 90%, as Brian De Palma once said, is in the casting.
Yeah.
And if you've cast the right actor, you don't have to worry so much about what they're going to do. You already know what they're going to do, and it's going to be something you like. And with Quentin, he preferred me only because he felt I was perhaps a more unpredictable actor, which he's not wrong, because I don't ever really know completely how I'll interpret something. But this is the difference. He's up for that ride.
Right.
And a lot of directors don't want to be up for that ride.
Yeah.
He said, when I hired you to do Vincent Vega, I had no idea how you were going to do it. He said, and then I started getting a sense of how you're going to do it, and I let you go. And he said, when you were moving slow and sloughing and talking differently and he said, I didn't really know exactly what you're doing. Then I realized you were playing the heroin, and then I realized you're doing this.
Yep.
And so his genius is really trusting the actor and allowing them to do how they feel it should be, you know.
Well, Well, my listeners are going to kill me if I don't, at least briefly before we go, ask about the two dance music crazes, you know, Saturday Night Fever and Grease. And let's start with Saturday Night Fever really fast. I know we're on the clock. When you're doing that strut down the beginning and Badham directing you to do that, I know Stayin' Alive with Bee Gees was written for the movie, but is there a scratch track you're doing that? Like,
no, we had a boombox playing right. in those days, and I had a debate with Stigwood, who produced it. He wanted me to do my big solo dance to Staying Alive, and I said, no, it's too slow. Staying Alive. I said, but what I could do is walk down the street in the beginning of the movie to that.
Oh, so he wanted you to do it in the disco.
Yes.
Later. Oh,
okay. I said, but I can't. You can't do the kind of solo I've been working on for 9 months with that music. I said, maybe something like more like You Should Be Dancing.
Yeah.
You should be dancing. Yeah, that yeah. I could yeah. move to that with sure. a little more speed than strutting. But I said, but that Staying Alive song is a strut song.
Right.
So he said, okay, fair enough. If you do the strut down the street with that, then I'll let you do the solo with You Should Be Dancing.
So that was all you. Nice. You bargained. You did a trade. That's perfect.
A trade.
All right. And then closing it out in Grease. I love it. I just smile thinking about that movie. Summer Nights. Whose idea was it, you or Olivia Newton-John, to do that up falsetto on the last one? The nah! Is that you? That seems like something you would bring to it.
Well, in all fairness, it was written into the song because I did the Broadway show yeah. and the road show not as Danny but as Duty.
Right, right.
But a classic lick of the 50s songs were all those high falsettos. So even Barry Bostwick, who originated the role in New York, did the high falsetto at the end as a reflection of the authentic 50s music, do you know?
Yeah.
The Four Seasons and other groups that were popular of the time yeah. all used that high falsetto, you know?
Absolutely. It's great. I just love it. And it's just fantastic. And I know they're giving me the cue. So thank you so much for taking the time to join us. Again, everybody, check out The Fanatic. It's in theaters August 30th, I believe. So yes. Thanks so much. It was a pleasure meeting you, sir.
My pleasure. Thank you. You're awesome.